Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for In the News and American Stories, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans in Washington. Today's program is all about music. We begin with a story about the Inner City Youth Orchestra of Los Angeles. The group has performed in Southern California and here in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Bob Doty has more.
The Inner City Youth Orchestra of Los Angeles plays popular music, classical works, and traditional American pieces. Most members of the group are African American or Hispanic. Miles David Hall is a violinist.
Having this ability and defying stereotypes, I think, is something that's something that I love to be a part of.
The orchestra has performed at the Disney Concert Hall and at major events in Los Angeles and in Washington, D.C. Violinist Amber Daughtry says she and the others share their love of music.
Well, to me, it just feels like I'm just soaring, and it has me wrapped up in it.
Bass player Daquan Robinson says the orchestra has changed in the 6 years since it started.
To see how it had grown from 9 to 80 plus was like mind-blowing.
Charles Dickerson has served as the orchestra's conductor for the past 6 years. He says membership is open to anyone between the ages of 10 to 25. But all members must have a basic understanding of their instrument. The orchestra, he says, is one way to get the world to listen.
Just like any kids in any other community who are striving to make a statement that they are important too and that their community is important.
Glory! Glory!
A men's chorus has been training with the orchestra for a special performance. The show will note the deaths of young black men as a result of police action in separate incidents across the country. Orchestra members say they hope the music in their performances can also send a message. I'm Bob Doty.
You are listening to As It Is from VOA, Learning English. The late Willis Conover, an internationally known jazz producer and broadcaster, broadcast jazz music from the studios at the Voice of America for more than 40 years. People still write to VOA about Conover, who died in 1996. Bob Doty looks back at the career of the famous broadcaster.
Imagine tuning the dial of a shortwave radio through static that crackled and popped. Finally, the dial finds the musical notes of The A-Train, a popular song written by the great Duke Ellington. Next comes Conover's voice saying,
"Time for jazz. Willis Conover in Washington, D.C. with The Voice of America Jazz Hour."
For more than 40 years, Willis Conover's long-running Jazz Hour introduced millions of people in Europe and the former Soviet Union to American jazz. He produced jazz concerts at the White House, the Newport Jazz Festival, and for movies and television. He was the voice of jazz around the world.
I don't think anyone, including Frank Sinatra, sings a song as well as the Frank Sinatra of half a dozen years ago. Listen.
You go to my head and you linger like...
But at home in America, few people knew him or his work. Maristella Fusel is the Music Special Collections Librarian at the University of North Texas. She says a big chapter in jazz history is now being told.
It's a gigantic, untold chapter in jazz history, because all of these interviews have been hidden so long. Willis's role overseas in propagating jazz and its effect in presenting the best of America in actions rather than words, all of these things are untold, hidden history stateside, because the VOA wasn't able to broadcast stateside. So I see treasure trove of research, of history, of connections.
Now, under the music program at UNT, the Willis Conover Archive of Jazz Recordings are being made available online. Maristella Fusel says they received the music collection as a gift from the Willis Conover Jazz Preservation Foundation in 1997. She says the collection came with thousands of music recordings, interviews, program notes, and other personal items.
We've cataloged and added almost 20,000 CDs alone, just from Conover's collection. The processed collection, which includes his collection of reel-to-reel tapes spanning the early 1950s through 1996. Personal papers, writings, correspondence, you name it.
After applying to several grants to help with the preservation of the collection, UNT was awarded funding by the Grammy Foundation. Maristella adds that when using the online archive, listeners and users will grasp the significance of Willis Conover in waves.
First is just the idea that, yes, this guy is important. And then actually going through and seeing the interviews he's done and going through his correspondence, the playlists for his broadcasts, that's when it starts to really hit you.
There are 10 digital jazz recordings online. There's Willis Conover featuring Bill Evans at the Village Vanguard, an interview with American jazz pianist Art Tatum, and a live performance of the Orchestra of Washington, D.C., to name a few. Many other handwritten program notes also have been added. The online archive are free and open to the public. So far, it is being well received, Fusel said. There is a following on social media, too, like Facebook and Twitter. Again, Maristella Fusel.
It's been received very enthusiastically. I'm one of the administrators of the Willis Conover Facebook page, and we have just over 700 likes, and Willis still has a tremendous following, not only overseas, but with shortwave listeners in the States, and people are elated. And one of the emails I got following the posting of this collection, it was a very, very short but sweet email. It was from somewhere overseas. Respected librarian, thank you for providing the link to access my favorite music.
In honor of his memory, a petition has been sent to persuade the Postal Service's Stamp Advisory Committee to put Willis Conover on a U.S. postage stamp. The campaign received over 7,000 signatures. If it's approved, it will send the face of the voice who brought jazz to many listeners during the Cold War around the world again.
Hey, I think I better be moving along. You've got things to do, and I want to be able to come around again tomorrow, so I've enjoyed listening to records with you. Tomorrow, okay? Good night.
I'm Bob Doty.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans. Thanks for listening.
In the News is next, followed by American Stories. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is In the News. Chinese President Xi Jinping is on his first state visit to the United States. The Chinese leader spent his first 2 days meeting with the leaders of America's largest technology companies. They include Amazon, Apple, and Microsoft. Mr. Xi said he wants to improve intellectual property rights, such as patents for inventions and industrial designs. Property rights have been a tense issue between China and the U.S. China has been accused of copying American products without credit or fee to the American makers. Mr. Xi also said he wants to make it easier for foreign companies to do business in China. "We are working to create a new, open economic system, push forward reform of foreign investment management, and greatly reduce the restrictions on foreign investment," he said. Mr. Xi visited the headquarters of Microsoft Corporation and a nearby Boeing factory in Seattle. Chinese companies have agreed to buy 300 jets from the U.S. airplane maker. The aircraft reportedly cost about $38 billion. The deal also calls for Boeing to build a factory in China. U.S. business leaders want Mr. Xi to promise that their companies will be treated fairly when they do business in China. They want China to reduce the theft of business secrets from American computer networks, too. Those cyber attacks have cost companies billions of dollars in recent years. In a policy speech Tuesday, President Xi said China wanted to cooperate with the United States to prevent cyber attacks. He said China is not the aggressor and was attacked as well. But many American officials do not believe that. President Obama has said he is considering taking action against China because of the attacks. This week, a U.S. government agency released its inquiry of an attack on the personnel records of millions of government workers. The Office of Personnel Management found that more than 5.5 million fingerprint records were stolen in the cyber attack. That is more than 5 times as many as officials first reported. The attack was discovered earlier this year. It affected about 22 million federal workers, applicants, and their families. Investigators have told reporters privately they believe the Chinese government is responsible for the attack. But U.S. officials have not yet made this accusation public. Federal experts say that, as of now, the ability to misuse fingerprint data is limited. However, this probability could change over time as technology evolves. The attack could put at risk any U.S. intelligence officers or individuals working secretly overseas. President Xi's visit comes only days after Chinese officials arrested and jailed an American businesswoman from Texas. Chinese officials say the woman, Sandy Fan Gillis, is suspected of spying and stealing state secrets. Over the years, many Texas businesses have developed relationships with Chinese companies, but the arrest of Sandy Fan Gillis has made some of them feel uneasy now. And that's In the News from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Jones-Cruz.
Now, the special English program, American Stories. Our story today is called Rappaccini's Daughter. It was written by Nathaniel Hawthorne. We will tell the story in two parts. Here is Kay Gallant with the first part of our story.
Many years ago, a young man named Giovanni Guasconti left his home in Naples to study in northern Italy. He rented a small room on the top floor of a dark and ancient palace. Long ago, the building had belonged to a noble family. Now, an old woman, Signora Lisabetta, rented its rooms to students at the University of Padua. Giovanni's room had a small window. From it, he could see a large garden that had many plants and flowers. "Does the garden belong to you?" he asked Signora Lisabetta one day. "Oh, no," she said quickly. "That garden belongs to the famous doctor, Giacomo Rappaccini. People say he uses those plants to make strange kinds of medicine. He lives in that small brown house in the garden with his daughter Beatrice." Giovanni often sat by his window to look at the garden. He had never seen so many different kinds of plants. They all had enormous green leaves and magnificent flowers in every color of the rainbow. Giovanni's favorite plant was in a white marble vase near the house. It was covered with big purple flowers. One day, while Giovanni was looking out his window, he saw an old man in a black cape walking in the garden. The old man was tall and thin. His face was an unhealthy yellow color. His black eyes were very cold. The old man wore thick gloves on his hands and a mask over his mouth and nose. He walked carefully among the plants, as if he were walking among wild animals or poisonous snakes. Although he looked at the flowers very closely, he did not touch or smell any of them. When the old man arrived at the plant with the big purple flowers, he stopped. He took off his mask and called loudly, "Beatrice, come help me."
"I am coming, Father. What do you want?" answered a warm young voice from inside the house. A young woman came into the garden. Her thick, dark hair fell around her shoulders in curls. Her cheeks were pink, and her eyes were large and black. She seemed full of life, health, and energy as she walked among the plants. Giovanni thought she was as beautiful as the purple flowers in the marble vase. The old man said something to her. She nodded her head as she touched and smelled the flowers that her father had been so careful to avoid. Several weeks later, Giovanni went to visit Pietro Baglioni, a friend of his father's. Professor Baglioni taught medicine at the university. During the visit, Giovanni asked about Dr. Rappaccini. "He is a great scientist," Professor Baglioni replied, "but he is also a dangerous man." "Why?" asked Giovanni.
The older man shook his head slowly. Because Rappaccini cares more about science than he does about people. He has created many terrible poisons from the plants in his garden. He thinks he can cure sickness with these poisons. It is true that several times he has cured a very sick person that everyone thought would die. But Rappaccini's medicine has also killed many people. I think he would sacrifice any life, even his own, for one of his experiments. But what about his daughter? Giovanni said. I'm sure he loves her. The old professor smiled at the young man. So, he said,